clothing of the husband and wife showed their intense sorrow as they looked at their adult son in his hospital bed in the intensive care unit. It accurately recorded how their brows had been furrowed and their mouths downturned. They had known there was nothing they could do for him except to be there and wait for his recovery, which they also knew would take many long months, and which in any case was not guaranteed. For their son had undergone a 12-hour operation the day before. It had involved the careful removal of a brain tumour the size of a tangerine. Two teams of skilled doctors took it in turns to perform the procedure, and their patient was told that there would be unavoidable side effects. Nevertheless, the young man had decided to go ahead. And later, after learning that his young patient was going to take up this option, the consultant had said, "Well, we'll let you have Christmas with your family and then operate in January. A week or so longer won't make any difference." The young man not only survived the intense and incredible amount of surgery, but he found that over time he could not only live with the side effects of the surgery, but that inside him was in fact a natural artistic talent of which he had previously never been aware. Hence, he was eventually able to paint his parents as they had appeared in his hospital ward when they visited him the day after his major operation. And indeed, he was able to begin a new career as an artist. He also met a young lady who became his partner and set up home with her. I could say at this point that this true story had resulted in a happy ending, but I don't think that this courageous young man would want me to say that, since no doubt there are still significant challenges which he and his partner have to face every day. Yet the message of this part of both his life, her life, and the lives of his parents is clear. The waiting was worth it, more than worth it. Advent, as we know, is a time of waiting. That's what the word means. We too, as Christians, are waiting to celebrate the birth of Jesus on Christmas Day. And throughout the world, in all branches of the Christian Church, Advent is a serious thinking time. The Church underlines this by giving us the liturgical colour of purple. And indeed, if one of the ministers in our circuit were here this morning taking the service, they would be wearing a stole, that sort of scarf worn over their clerical dress, which would almost certainly be purple. Our waiting will also be worth it, more than worth it. Sometimes we may ask, what sort of world is it for which we are waiting? So much, for instance, of what we see and hear around us is at best unclear, and we can never know immediately whether something is good or whether something is less than good or even bad. Last Friday, I happened to watch an advert on TV. You may have seen it yourself, but I hadn't till then, which was selling a robotic Yorkshire Terrier puppy. And I have a photo which Jessica is kindly going to project if possible now, not of the Yorkshire Terrier robot, but of one similar, a puppy also that is a robot. That is a robotic puppy operated by AI. The puppy that we saw on the TV advert looked not exactly like that one, of course, but that one is not a Yorkshire Terrier. I think it's taken the form of a Labrador puppy, Golden Retriever puppy. But the one we saw, and I suggest that one too, looked, and this one looks, completely real. And so much so that the friend with whom I was watching the advert was at first convinced that it was an actual Yorkshire Terrier puppy which needed a home. And she thought the charming 3-minute advert we were seeing was simply highlighting the commendable work of an animal charity which was involved in finding homes for pets. Not so. The puppy was actually a robot, controlled by, as I say, artificial intelligence, which enabled it to recognise its young owner's voice, come when called, respond to her strokes, and go to sleep and wake up as any puppy would. The advert concluded with the satisfied tones of the voiceover saying, "My granddaughter has stopped asking about having a real puppy to look after." Well, I wondered if that were a good or a bad thing. For even if her apparently doting grandmother could afford to give her what is probably an extremely expensive gift at the moment, is it really desirable that the little girl should no longer wish to care for a puppy which would have real needs? And is it really to the child's advantage that she would become attached to a robot that, for all its amazing lifelike qualities, will never age and will stay the same forever, even though she herself will not? Medical scientists of the mind often say that it's actually good for children to observe the cycle of life and death in a pet, no matter how distressing that may be at times. For they learn a valuable lesson which cannot be properly communicated in any other way. So was the advert for a robotic puppy a negative then? Well, for me, the jury is still very much out. To be fair, for all the times when negativity seems to surround us, our faith is a reminder that there are always positive things too, about which we don't always hear. For instance, in addition to learning about the robotic puppy during the past week, I also learned that medical science has advanced so much that the treatment of certain illnesses is and will continue to be much quicker and more effective. And I was also able to listen to a live address given by a young woman who had survived against all the odds her cancer diagnosis, and who now runs mini marathons to raise money for further research. The future is therefore often much brighter than we may be tempted, or indeed manipulated by media of all kinds, to think. And the advent of medical breakthroughs is just one area where this is so. In today's Gospel reading from St. Matthew's Gospel, we heard how some of the disciples of John the Baptist, the older cousin of Jesus by 6 months, were sent by John, who by then had been put in prison by King Herod for having spoken truth to power, to ask Jesus if he really were the Messiah, the one that everyone had been waiting for, or whether they should actually be waiting for someone else. In other words, had they got it right? And perhaps we have the image now for projection so we can see, have an idea of Jesus speaking to them. Jesus then talking about John the Baptist, and we shall see in a moment, we heard already, but we shall see again in a moment, just how full of praise Jesus was for his cousin. The main thing which might have undermined the faith of John the Baptist and his disciples in Jesus was that Jesus had not ushered in the sort of spiritual regime envisaged in our first reading from the prophet Isaiah to the universal approval of the Jewish people. Ken Dobson, in his NIV First Century Study Bible, writes that Jesus probably frustrated John's initial fiery vision of the arrival of God's judgment. And he sent his messengers to ask about Jesus himself for that reason. However, by pointing out to John's messengers the healing that he was doing, this would have been enough for Jesus to reassure them that the messianic age was dawning. Ken Dobson also writes that the reason why Jesus never directly proclaimed that he was indeed the promised Messiah was that this would have immediately meant that he too would have landed in prison, just like his cousin John the Baptist. And this would therefore have meant that he could not carry out his mission as God's chosen one. So Jesus bids the messengers to go and tell John what you've seen and heard. The blind see again, lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised to life. And the good news is proclaimed to the poor, and happy is the man who does not lose faith in me. I once heard a cleric say that if we ourselves ever have doubts about whether Jesus really was and is who he said he was, we should remember that we are in good company, for even John the Baptist had those doubts. It is often, as we saw in the case of the young man who had such major brain surgery, not easy to wait for something, for recovery in his case, or for, in the case of Jesus, the longed-for Messiah. But our waiting patiently will be rewarded. It will be more than worth it. Jesus then goes on from verses 10 to 11 to praise his cousin John, as we heard earlier. John now, of course, enduring unjust imprisonment for his courage in fearlessly proclaiming the coming of Jesus into the world. Of all children born of woman, Jesus declares, a greater than John the Baptist has never been born. And then Jesus adds something mysterious to what he says, for he states, yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he is. I've often pondered on these words because after all the praise that Jesus has just publicly given his cousin, John the Baptist, that does seem to be an extraordinary statement. However, after I'd done a little more reading, I realised that of course the new kingdom, which Jesus himself was bringing in, by its very nature, meant and still means that it supersedes what went before. Jesus is simply acknowledging that John the Baptist was effectively the last of the Old Testament prophets, prophesying about the advent, the coming of Jesus' cousin and the Messiah into the world. John therefore links what has passed to what is still to come. But he nevertheless remains outside the new kingdom, the dawning of the Messianic age, as biblical scholars often write it, the age of the Messiah, Jesus. This is not sad or worrying, it is fulfilling. And John will have seen in it exactly that light, for both he himself, as well as of course Jesus, were fulfilling what Holy Scripture had said for centuries, for hundreds of years, would come true. Indeed, John himself, elsewhere in the Gospels, says about Jesus, he must grow greater, I must grow smaller. It all reminds me, in a way, of the relay races at the Olympic Games, always my favourite event of the Games. John the Baptist, to me, is like the penultimate runner in the team, who has received the baton and is passing it on carefully yet speedily to the final runner who has been chosen to finish and to win the race. Now, our first reading this morning was from the prophet Isaiah. We heard verses 1 to 10 from chapter 35 of the book of Isaiah read out, and we heard that God had a new vision for the future of his people. For in verses 4 to 5, Isaiah writes, look, your God is coming. He is coming to save you. Moreover, verse 8 says there is to be a highway, undefiled, which shall be called the sacred way. The unclean may not travel by it, nor fools stray along it. And verse 9 tells us that no lion will be there, nor any fierce beast roam about it. But the redeemed, that's you and me, and the whole world, the redeemed will be there, for those that Yahweh, meaning God, has ransomed, shall return. What a vision for the future, a vision which Isaiah was not privileged to see fulfilled on earth, but which we in our time believe we do have a chance of experiencing with God in heaven, and also of helping to bring in, however imperfectly at this present point, on earth, God's kingdom. And so let us conclude this part of our service by listening to a short prayer for this, the third Sunday then of Advent. Pull back the curtain on Bethlehem stable, strip off the tinsel and peer through the dark. Look at the child who's a threat yet in danger. Homeless and helpless, he first makes his mark. Love is the secret. Love is the secret. Love is God's cradle, God's table, God's cup, and God's ark. Amen.